looking further into the walnut-sized, sparkling blue Hope Diamond that is said to be cursed. The Hope Diamond is set into a pendant surrounded by 16 white diamonds, both pear and cushion cut. The necklace chain consists of 45 white diamonds. The deep blue gem is tied to some mysterious stories that may either be convenient coincidence or supernatural occurrence. Is it possible that these stories are evident of something darker and maybe supernatural?
We'll dig further into these stories as well as how the Hope Diamond made it from its original 112 3/16 carat size when Jean-Baptiste Tavernier purchased the violet in India, and it is now currently at the size of 45.52 carats.
Where is the Hope Diamond now? It's at the National Gem and Mineral Collection at the National Museum of Natural History in Washington, D.C.
The eastern sky was red as coals in a forge, lighting up the flats along the river. Dew had wet the million needles of the chaparral, and when the rim of the sun edged over the horizon, the chaparral seemed to be spotted with diamonds. A bush in the little backyard was filled with the little rainbows as the sun touched the dew. Larry McMurdy in Lonesome Dove.
The 14th ruled for 72 years, and he was the ruler who asked his jeweler to cut the Hope Diamond. If you're like us, you may be wondering where the rest of it went. 112 3/16 carat to 67 carats.
The Tavernier blue is cut to just over 67 carats, as Emily said, by Sieur Petau, the king's jeweler. Again, please excuse any pronunciation errors. It being the gem becomes known as the blue diamond of the crown, or the French blue at 67 1/8 carats.
At the diamond's dazzling heart was a sun with seven facets, the sun being Louis's emblem, and seven being a number rich in meaning in biblical cosmology, indicating divinity and spirituality. And that's from a report in Agence France-Presse in 2008.
Unfortunately, King Louis XIV died of gangrene late in his 70s at Versailles. That is one of the first bits of bad luck associated that we could find with the Hope Diamond.
Mm-hmm. And he was the one who commissioned the cutting of the diamond.
And you may notice that it's about cut in half, almost. We're hoping to dig up where some of those other pieces of diamond went.
Yeah, that seems like such a large chunk of diamond to be missing. I mean, it seems like it would have turned up somewhere. I mean, as far as all of the research that we've done so far, it seems like it's really just gone.
You know, if it was cut into smaller diamonds, as the Hope Diamond was part of the French royal gems.
I think it was the treasury. It was like the crown jewels.
I don't know if the part that was cut off was made into smaller gems and also put into that collection.
So if you follow our Instagram feed, you saw the piece of jewelry set by André Jacquemin for King Louis XV, who reigned for 59 years and died from smallpox. This piece of jewelry was worn around his neck with a ribbon for ceremonial use for the Order of the Golden Fleece.
Just a note on that, the Order of the Golden Fleece was a group of knights. Had something to do with chivalry, so it was more, like you said, ceremonial. So I guess that's why he could wear it on a ribbon and not worry about losing it.
Okay.
A lot of money around his neck, so.
Yeah, that seems like not a super secure way to hold something that valuable. One thing we didn't mention was that the red Cote de Bragan, the spinal gemstone, the gem that looks like it was poured and molded cinnamon hard candy. It's a little hard to tell, but when you zoom in, you can see the gemstone was carved to look like a dragon. The Tosson d'Or de la Peru de Collier, the colored version of the Golden Fleece, contrasting with the Blanc, the white version showcased the French blue.
King Louis XV was a knight of the Ordre de la Toison d'Or, also known as the Order of the Golden Fleece. His branding or insignia was commissioned in 1749 and worked by André Jacquemin, as already mentioned. He was to create a golden fleece. You can see in the piece on Instagram where at the very bottom of the piece, the golden fleece is hanging there and drooping. I had read it was painted yellow diamonds that cover the fleece.
We left the story of the Hope Diamond with the really bad luck of the next king, King Louis XVI and Marie Antoinette after being imprisoned in 1792. Louis XVI became referenced by Louis Capet, and Marie Antoinette became the widow Capet after Louis XVI's execution. The prior king was executed by guillotine on Monday the 1st of January 1793, and Marie Antoinette was executed following her husband in October of 1793. And the French blue fell into the hands of thieves after their executions.
The French blue diamond remained missing for quite a while until it popped up in the hands of Daniel Eliason in London, England. Before that, it was possible that King George IV had bought it kind of under the table, I guess. It wasn't really advertised that he had it.
Yeah, it sounded a little slimy from what you were telling me, like just a little... little under the table.
Yeah, it showed up in a painting of him, I think we had read something about at some point. And, you know, I guess an artist could be told, hey, paint that in, that'd be really neat. But also artists work from reference, especially with portraiture. So, so it seemed a little interesting and like it had just kind of joined his jewels. The king spent years suffering from poor health, including gout, loss of vision, and many other ailments. He ended up dying from upper intestinal bleeding in his stomach, which really sounds like a rough way to go.
It did not sound good. When I was researching this, it sounded like he knew the end was coming after he passed some bloody stool, and he called everyone in and was like, this is the end.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the Hope Diamond was sold after he died to help pay off debts he had amassed. So one of the king's senior aides wrote in his diary about George IV that a more contemptible, cowardly, selfish, unfeeling dog does not exist. There have been good and wise kings, but not many of them, and this I believe to be one of the worst. It seems to be a similar situation to public regard about Marie Antoinette and Louis XVI.
As of Wicks and Jewelers in Minneapolis, Minnesota, the following are a list of popular diamond shapes. Round, princess, cushion, marquee, emerald, radiant, pear, oval, and asher. We'll make sure to link their guide in the show notes.
Okay, yeah, that's cool. And then you guys can see, and they have drawings of them, so you can see what they actually look like and the cuts are. The pear is used in the setting of the Hope Diamond. You can see it. There's a cushion and a pear, and they surround the gem of the Hope Diamond. And the images are referenced on the Instagram account, as well as we have a blog post where you can go and see the necklace for yourself and see what it looks like.
We're going to touch on the history of popular cuts just quickly, I think. Over the years, the most popular cut for diamond engagement rings has always been the round brilliant, which consists of 58 facets that divide the stone into a top and bottom half. Runners up to this popularity include the princess cut, the emerald cut, and the oval cut, with the cushion cut quickly gaining popularity as a recent trend. The cushion cut is most likely the rings that you've been seeing on Instagram if you've been scrolling through the celebrity engagement photos. They seem to really be favoring the cushion cut. But that's from the Encyclopedia of Superstitions by Christina Hole.
According to gemstone lore, the diamond, emerald, garnet, hyacinth, opal, and topaz are all traditional fidelity emblems. But any precious stone shares the general symbolism of permanence that attaches to stone itself. And that came from 1001 Symbols, an illustrated guide to imagery and its meaning by Jack Tressider.
One piece of information that you found, Mom, that was really interesting but also was a little off-putting was that anthropologists believe this tradition of an engagement ring originated from a Roman custom in which wives wore rings with small keys attached, which indicated their husband's ownership, which is a little problematic. I mean, as far
that's
as...
That's distressing. Yeah.
Yeah.
That, yeah. Both.
Definitely. Yeah.
In 1477, it said the Archduke Maximilian of Austria commissioned the very first diamond engagement ring on record for his betrothed, Mary of Burgundy, and this sparked a trend for diamond rings among European aristocracy and nobility. And this information is coming from the American Gem Society.
In 1947, De Beers launched its now classic slogan, "A diamond is forever." This campaign spurred even more sales. The implied durability of a diamond conveyed the meaning in the American psyche that marriage is forever. A diamond's purity and sparkle have now become symbols of the depth of a man's commitment to the woman he loves in practically all corners of the world. The opening of the De Beers mines in Africa made diamonds more accessible. And in the 1930s, when demand for diamond rings declined in the U.S. during hard economic times, the De Beers Company began an aggressive marketing campaign using photographs of glamorous movie stars swathed in diamonds. Within 3 years, the sales of diamonds had increased by 50%.
That just seems brutal.
Yeah, it's like the nation's struggling, but you need diamonds in your life, clearly. It's like, really?
Really rough. Diamonds still signify the celebration of a union and cherished memory, though more cuts make more styles an easy option for diamond lovers. And this information all came from the AmericanGemSociety.org and give us some history that we wouldn't have otherwise known about De Beers. I thought that was interesting when you just said that, Emily, about during hard economic times. I mean, I know they want to keep their company in business, but that...
It just seems like kind of a low blow. I mean, the nation's already struggling and it's like something that's so frivolous. I mean, I don't know. I'm sure it's not frivolous to some people, but it just seems from an outward perspective when, you know, you're struggling to feed your family or whatever in the Great Depression that, you know, diamonds would be the furthest thing from your mind, I would assume.
Yeah, I know we're 20,000 feet, you know, all these years later.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But still, I mean, the things going on back then would have been pretty rough. Term wars and different things going on. And okay, so enough of that. I guess we've got the story of Alexander the Great and the Valley of Diamonds and Jewels, which came from the ascension of propitious stars and sources of sovereign in Turkish. It was illuminated by a valley jam for Aisha Sultan, 1604, the daughter of Sultan Murad III. The picture, again, something on Instagram. This is an illustration with two mountainsides with a valley down in the center with serpents and birds swooping down in it. Again, if you followed the last podcast, this will be a little familiar from Marco Polo and his story. In this illustration from the 16th century Turkish manuscript commissioned by Sultan Murad III, the deep rocky valley was filled with diamonds and jewels, and Iskander, Alexander the Great, was asked how they could be safely obtained, as they were protected by terrible creatures, here represented as poisonous snakes. His solution was to throw raw meat into the valley to which the gems would stick. The birds would then swoop down into the valley, carry off the gem-laden meat in their talons, and take it to the top, planning to eat the meat there. The birds would then be scared away, and the gems separated from the meat.
We'll be sure to post this beautiful image of the diamond-laden valley to this episode's references with links.
This came from the Morgan Library and Museum in New York City, New York, themorgan.org. Stick with us for the next and final episode on the Hope Diamond, about the Hope Diamond's journey to America and the time it spent here and where it ended up.
And we'll end with a quote. "Perhaps I should just bury myself and become a diamond after thousands of years of intense pressure." And that's by Lemony Snicket, and it's The Lump of Coal.